Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. It's an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5 over North America and worldwide on the Internet 7 days a week. For more information about the Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay with us for tonight's special report on the national debt right after this message. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business. We use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know there's a lot you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives between public business and private business. Now, to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours by calling direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the national debt, cause and effect, relationships, and so on, with this thing called money. And I picked up Sheldon Emery's book on Billions for the Bankers and Debts for the People. He wrote that back in 1977, and I've been citing some of the excerpts from it. Now, most of you listening to me are not strangers to the understanding or the concepts of the Federal Reserve and how paper money has been created and how it's a fraud and how the Federal Reserve has never been audited and so on. So I'm not going to bore you, you know, with a lot of useless information that you already know. What I want to do is to put all of it together so that you can have a grasp of the problem, understand the cause of the problem, and then if you have a mind to, solve the problem. Because if there's no solution to this problem, then we don't need to beat our gums talking about the Federal Reserve. Fortunately, there is a solution to the problem. Every problem has a cause. And this cause to the problem has a solution. And the solution was laid out thousands of years ago by a guy that could actually count. The problem with modern America is that we can no longer add, subtract, multiply, and divide. We can't count. We go to public school, and the public school has dumbed us down to such a degree we can't even think about counting. Now, I don't know about you, but I didn't learn to count until I was 37 years old. Oh, yeah. I went to public school, all right. And, yeah, they taught me 1 and 1 is 2 and 2 and 2 is 4. And I was in the real estate business for many years and general contracting business. I went to many closings on real estate transactions. I went out and bid in many jobs. I handled a lot of money. Millions of dollars went through my company accounts. Millions of dollars were paid in taxes to agencies of government. I'm pretty familiar with all that. I'm not a stranger to it at all. But from the time I started my business career at age 11 as a newspaper boy until I finally left the business world when I was 39, I couldn't count. I could not count. And when I got through with the real estate business in California, moved up to Idaho, I was supposed to have several million dollars worth of profits, and when I got to adding it all up, I didn't have all those imaginary profits that I thought I had. I had been living in a dream world that had been created for me by all of my mentors, starting with my first grade teacher, Mrs. Sorensen. She started me on a thinking or a mental process that culminated in my total lack of understanding. Not only was I ignorant, I could not grasp the magnitude of my ignorance. What a dilemma to be in. Let me tell you a little story here. The American Empire is delusional, and any modern mass media can artistically create amazingly lifelike illusions. They're not real, but they are part of reality, just as Greek stage drama was back in the days of Socrates. You see, back in Socrates' time, the rational Greeks knew that the show was a show. Today, to an astounding extent, the solid research shows that there are an amazing number of people who are actually living an alternative existence. We live this alternative existence inside of our own minds. The news and analysis that we see on the media is a more central thing than our own real lives. So today we live in an illusion, but we believe it. That's what brainwashing is all about. I've covered that here before. I did a series on brainwashing called Psychopolitics in Russia. It's the process whereby we make you believe a lie. President Bush has caused us to believe a lie. The Federal Reserve has caused us to believe a lie. Indeed, the entire American experience is a big illusion. It's a big lie, but we all believe it. And it's reinforced every day when we watch the news. Let me illustrate that for you. For decades in Russia and across Eastern Europe, living under savage state oppressions, there were indeed millions of people who had internally migrated, to use the Eastern European term. You see, they had created inside their own minds an alternative world and a very different individual life simply as a form of escape from the totally insufferable boredom and danger of their actual real lives. Now, over time, these internally lived lives became more vivid and more real to these people than the really real lives that they were actually living. So even after communism disappeared, many such people all across Eastern Europe found that they did not like the situation any better than the former situation. So after a pause, they returned to their internal, entirely imagined lives. In reality, of course, their lives stood still. See, there's reality, and then here's what I believe. Here's what I would like the world to be like. So, old folks today, retired on Social Security, have been dreaming for years of this utopian time when they don't have to work, they can get in their motorhomes and drive across America and do all the things that they've always wanted to do, see all the places that they've always wanted to see, and do it in the comfort of retirement income guaranteed from Social Security and from their IRAs and their Krug plans and their investments and so on, so that they will be financially independent for the first time in their lives. No mortgage payments to pay, and no house payments or car payments, and et cetera. We're going to be free. This is the American dream. It's not true, of course. And when these people get to be of retirement age, they find out that the money that's now coming in, you know, $800 or $1,000 a month coming in from Social Security doesn't cover the bills. I remember as a boy, when I first went to work in 1955, I got paid $250 a month in board and room. Within 3 years, I bought an airplane. I had an airplane. And I was flying regularly to Mexico on vacation, and I was milking cows and just manual labor, just common labor, nothing, no skills involved per se. You know, I Yeah, I could milk cows, and I was a pretty good farmer, but I wasn't skilled, as they would say, and I wasn't poor until I didn't realize I was poor until old Nelson Rockefeller said, if you're making under $4,000 a year, you're living below the poverty line. Now, here I was, hung up boarding room, and $250 a month, I'm flying an airplane, and Nelson Rockefeller tells me I'm poor. He tells me I'm living below the poverty line. I didn't know that. Well, once I learned that I was living below the poverty line, I looked around and I said, is this really reality? Is this some kind of a staged joke that Rockefeller is putting out here? You see, it was a propaganda ploy on the part of politicians to incite people's greed. Well, if $4,000 is below the poverty line or so, then what I need to do is earn more money. Now, it was in the 1960s that I first realized that industrial workers in the cities were making $1,000 a month. An unheard of amount of money. $1,000 a month. Of course, it took $1,200 a month to live in the city. And I got sucked into that, you know. I said, I'm going to leave the farm and I'm going to go to the city where I can make $12,000. Because, see, I was making under $4,000 a year. And when you're making under $4,000 a year, and somebody tells you you're living below the poverty line, even though you're flying an airplane, you believe it. I believed it. I moved to the city. I said, to hell with this farm. I'm out of here. So I went to the city, and I got a job that paid me $3.28 an hour, $127 a week, net, take-home pay. That was just the beginning. Well, as time progressed along, I took a $65 a month apartment in Alameda, California, and I worked my way up the economic ladder. And as time progressed, I indeed did reach that American dream, that fantasy land. I became a contractor and I went out and I made a lot of money. Here's what I discovered. Living in the city, paying for all of the goods and services that I normally would take for granted, you know, like milk from the cow. You know, I drank lots of milk because we were on a dairy and so we had lots of milk to drink. But when you're in the city, you have to pay for every drop you drink. It's money out of pocket. So I didn't understand the connection between free room and board and $250 a month and all the milk that you can drink with $3.28, which seemed like a lot of money, but then you got to pay for all that milk that you're drinking out of the store. You got to buy every pound of meat. You see, when you live on the ranch, you eat meat every day, potatoes, all your food. You don't think about, well, gosh, I got to buy all of that. And so this is why people in the city get sick, because they eat so pork. Why do they eat pork? Because they got to pay for all of it. And so there's this constant struggle in the city to stretch your food dollar. And so you people eat a lot of starch. That's why you're obese and overweight. You don't drink milk, and that's good, because the milk you're drinking in the city isn't fit to drink anyway. And it gave me a heart attack by the time I was 45 years old or before. And that pasteurized milk will do that. So you get bad health, and you eat poor, and then you're struggling to make ends meet. And prices continually escalate. Every year, they raise the price of rent. See, I was paying $65 a month, and then they raised it to $75, and then $85, and then $100, and then it was $120, and then it was $150. People tell me today that they're paying $1,400 a month, you know, for a two-bedroom apartment in Hayward, California. And I go, well, my God, What's going on there? Well, inflation is what's going on. Inflation. And the reason that we're suffering from inflation is because we're violating these economic laws. Of course, in those days, I didn't know what an economic law was. I was living in a dream world. I was living in fantasy land, which is where the American empire is today. We're in fantasy land, but we believe it's true. We pay our income taxes, and we have these dreams that aren't going to come true. They're an illusion. In fact, most people know that it's really an illusion, but they want to believe it so much that they go ahead and believe it anyway, in spite of the facts. Well, over time, these internally lived lives become more vivid and more real to these people than the real lives that they're actually living. Even after communism disappeared, many such people all across Eastern Europe found that they did not like the situation any better. So after a pause, they returned to their internally imagined lives. In reality, of course, their lives stood still. And that's because we've been captured by manufactured illusions. The educational system is a manufactured illusion. The employment picture is a manufactured illusion. The money that you take in and deposit in the bank, yes, indeed, you receive more and more dollars, and you receive wage increases constantly, but the purchasing power of the wage increases that you've received since 1973 produce zero real growth. So for the last 30 years, everybody stood still. We're making more and more money. I went from $250 a month to $500, to $1,000, to $2,000, to $5,000 a month. But you see, it sucked up all of that money in the cost of living. I'm handling more and more money, but I'm actually not living any better. In fact, I'm living poorer. You see, when I lived on the ranch at $250 a month in board and room, I drank all the milk that I wanted. It might be as much as a gallon a day. Not in the city. You see, in the city, you got to pay money for that milk. And so you drink a half a gallon a day and you drink more Kool-Aid or water or something else. And so when we drink more Kool-Aid, we drink more sugar. When we drink more sugar, we have poorer health. So we lose more days of work. I can't ever remember losing a day's work on the ranch. I lost lots of days' work in the city. That's why we have to have sick leave in the city. You don't have sick leave on the ranch. There's no need for sick leave because nobody ever gets sick, and that's because everybody eats so well. And because we ate so well, we had perfect health, and because we had perfect health, we could work harder and longer. In the city, we get weaker and weaker, sicker and sicker, poorer and poorer. But we manufacture this dream world because we're making more and more dollars, which of course is a manufactured illusion because these dollars don't buy more. In most cases, they buy less and less. So you people on a fixed income today received a 3.5% cost of living index raise this year, while inflation has been programmed at 25%. You actually have a 21.5% net loss this year in purchasing power. Yeah, that's right. A 20% net loss in purchasing power, but you received a 3.5% pay raise. That's an illusion, and it's a staged illusion to make you feel like I'm making more money. The way you will make up for that, you used to eat steak. Now you're going to eat fish. You'll substitute one meat for another meat. You'll eat more pork because pork's cheaper than beef. You'll still eat meat and potatoes, but it's not going to be steak and potatoes. It's not going to be filet mignon and baked potato. It's going to be hamburger and mashed potatoes. And then it may be sausage and rice. And then it may be, you know, something less than that. Maybe we'll eat more lasagna. You know, people kid themselves. Their living standards are getting poorer and poorer, but they kid themselves that they're making more and more money. And that's the illusion. That's what brainwashing is all about. You're living a lie. You believe a lie. But it's psychopolitics. You believe it's true. So when immense manufactured themes are a near constant part of an intellectual surrounding, it can be hard sometimes to hold a clear grasp of the difference between such politically manufactured realities and the real facts. Such is the inherent nature of all state manufactured propaganda. The true task of any individual, if subjected to this, to a gross or grotesque extent, is to stay clear of it. You stay clear in intellectual as well as moral and political terms by looking for the real facts. That preserves the distinction between they say and I know. They say and I know. Government is constantly telling us. And this is called the power of suggestion. And the power of suggestion is a very powerful psychological tool. And Adolf Hitler honed in on it. He said, if you tell a lie over and over and over again, people will believe it. He also made another observation: the bigger the lie, the more likely people are to believe it. Social Security is a lie, and it's a big lie. It's a Ponzi scheme, and it's a big Ponzi scheme. And because government is directing this Ponzi scheme, everybody believes in it and actually believes that it's not a Ponzi scheme. They actually believe it. Now, the hard facts are inflation is paying you more and more dollars with less and less purchasing power. You're actually getting poorer and poorer with more and more money in the bank. Your living standard is going down, down, down. In fact, the living standards of Americans today are less than they were in 1955, 50 years ago. You see, my dad worked and supported his family on one income and did it nicely. In fact, he could go out and buy a new car every two or three years and pay cash for it. He could actually walk into the Chevy dealer, plunk down $2,500 and walk out with an automobile. Now, today, those same automobiles are $25,000 or $30,000, and you people do not have $25,000 or $30,000 every couple of years to walk in, plunk down, pay cash for an automobile. In fact, it now takes you and your wife working together with two incomes, pulling in $50,000, $60,000 a year. Now, I don't care whether you're making $25,000 or $125,000, you people are just barely getting by. I don't care whether you're a lawyer, a doctor, a dentist, whatever your business or profession may be, whatever your status in life may be, you are just barely getting by. And if you're in debt, you're not getting by. If you're in debt at all, you're not getting by. When I was a kid, people didn't have debt. That doesn't mean that debt didn't exist. Debt was looked upon as being bad, poor, poor business, poor management, poverty. You don't want debt. It's true, people were buying houses on time, they were buying cars on time, but they didn't look upon it as being, it's good. And if some debt's good, then a whole lot of debt must be better, as we do today. They looked upon debt as being bad. And if you're doing it, you just do it for the least amount of time, pay this thing off as soon as possible, and get on with your life. Today, we're not only in debt, it's an endemic debt. It's there forever. And we never get out of debt. We just service the debt. We're concerned about, well, I need a pay raise so that I can service my debt. So when immense manufactured themes are near and a constant part of your intellectual surroundings, it becomes hard for you then to hold a clear grasp of the difference between politically manufactured realities and real or truly factual realities. And such is the inherent nature of all of the state manufactured propaganda. The true task of any individual, if subjected to this, to a gross or a grotesque extent, is to stay clear of it. And you stay clear in intellectual as well as moral and political terms. Hey, we're not doing that here in the United States. We're not steering clear of these intellectual fantasies that are being created, the propaganda being created by institutions and government. When this happens, the mind then captures or traps you. Your mind. You're actually captured by your own mind. This is the epitome of brainwashing. We're going to tell you a lie. We're going to make you believe this lie. And now we're going to make you believe that it's righteous, holy, just, and good, and you thought it up, so that you will defend it to your last dying breath. You will defend this lie. Now, there's a very old saying in classical logic about the absolute necessity for the liar to know the truth. You see, if he or she doesn't know the truth, how can they lie? But to become confused between the truth and a lie can end up very badly indeed. In the history of politics, it is a near constant that many of the so-called great political men have ended up being captured by the exact same lies that they've been telling for years. And at that point, they too have lost hold on reality, and they have led their nations to ruin. Now, as best as we can determine from history, Julius Caesar never lost his grasp on reality. But he was a gambler, and he was addicted to ever higher and higher stakes and ultimately got him killed. His successor, Augustus Caesar, never gambled. But in stopping the advance of the Roman Empire, he ensured its future decay by introducing his version of the welfare state. The welfare and the warfare state that in the end finally exhausted Rome and put them into national oblivion. Now, those who were close to Napoleon were well aware that there were times when he lived an almost exclusive life in his own inner land of self-made illusions. On becoming aware of such an episode, they would say that His Majesty Napoleon has been captured by his genius. We see that all around us today. Very bright people who have attended the Harvard Business School and have now taken over the helm of Enron and WorldCom and these big corporations become captured by their own genius. They're very bright people, no doubt about it. But they're so ignorant that they fall into this delusional world. What else can you say about Enron? It was a delusion. Even the people who were the head of this multi-billion dollar corporation, this huge conglomerate energy company, were caught up in the delusion that, hey, we're all right, we're making money here. This is a profitable business. We're in energy, like Enron and Exxon and Mobil. But Napoleon lasted a long time because Napoleon could, and he did, return to reality with a crash. And with near superhuman physical and intellectual effort, he could find unique solutions where those around him saw nothing but insurmountable danger. Now, political men have to know the hard facts. They have to know these facts regardless of the pablum that these politicians are feeding to the public. If they get captured by the lies that they themselves manufacture for others, like Lyndon Johnson did over the Vietnam War, they can lose full contact with reality. And the consequences can and usually are dire, especially if the public are themselves subject to the same politically manufactured illusions. And there comes a point where there are few or none close enough to the center of political power to tell the power wielder these hard truths. In other words, what happens is this illusion is built up around the power broker like George Bush. Because this illusion is built, those that are around him don't really have what it takes. They don't have the gonads to say, "Boss, boss, wake up, wake up. We're in dire straits here. We got to have a solution to this." They too go to the boss and say, "Everything's fine, boss. Everything's going great." You see this with the war in Iraq. I'm sure President Bush, you know, is getting advice from his subordinates. Now, are his subordinates telling him the realities, or are they telling him the fictions and the illusions? The same thing is true with our national economy. It's been this way, you know, for 75 years. And each and every one of you listening to me right now, you're in debt. And you've been listening to these illusions. These credit cards are good. And the interest that we're paying, you know, at 27%, there's no big problem here. We can still service the debt. We can make the payments every month. It reminds me one time my wife had a woman on the witness stand. And she had examined this woman on direct examination. And she got some pretty valuable admissions and confessions out of her. The woman got off the stand. She walked out. The witnesses were sequestered out in the hall. She walked out into the hall and she said to her husband, "Well, that Jackie wasn't so smart. I could answer every question." And that's when her husband said that he knew the case had been lost. "I could answer all of her questions." Same thing is true here. I can service all of my debts. The illusion is you're in debt and you can service your debt, but the ultimate disaster is bankruptcy. You are upside down like Enron, and you're going the way of Enron. It may take 5, 10, 20, 50 years, like the United States of America. We've been like this since the 1930s. When we created the Federal Reserve in 1913, the die was cast. The inevitable destruction and collapse, the debacle of the great American experiment, had been cast in cement. But nobody knew how long will it take to play out. 50 years? 100 years? 200 years? Same thing was true of Rome. We didn't know when it was going to play out. We just knew that ultimately it would. All right, hang on. I got to take a little break here. It's halfway marked in the program. And we'll be back with more here on the national debt when we return. You're listening to The Law Hour. I'm your host, George Gordon. And The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. And this surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that the state agencies of New York operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contain 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for? How do you keep it away from them? Well, knowing how information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy if you just knew how. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call 417-273-4967 and ask for my free general law CD package. And I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now to order yours. It's 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the national debt. Remember, I expanded. I'm not just talking about the federal debt, you know. It's increased 26%, by the way. Since George Bush took office, he has increased the national debt, that's the federal national debt, by 26%, or about $1.5 trillion. Well, that's a pretty significant run-up in the national debt, but that national debt of $8 trillion is a drop in the bucket. The real problem that we Americans face and that we have to have a solution for, and you can solve your financial problems at the local level. And I teach a business school, and I'll show you how to do that. You see, let me just tell you plainly, I'm not in debt. I'm not concerned about the collapse of the economy. I'm not tied to the national economy. I'm tied to property and property rights. Our Constitution provides for a choice. God Almighty provides for a choice. In Deuteronomy 30, he told us, now choose, you know, make a choice. When you went down and signed that promissory note on the mortgage for your house, you made a choice. And now you got to live with it. And the penalty that you're paying is the interest on the debt. I'll cover that in greater detail, and I'll show you what the penalty is in dollars. I mean, I can just lay it out for you in dollars and cents. I think anybody can grasp this. Once somebody shows you how to count. Well, I didn't learn to count until I was 37, but boy, once I learned to count, I've never been the same since. And once I teach you to count, you'll never be the same again either. because learning how to count is what brings you back to reality. You're living in a fantasy world now, servicing your debt, working for somebody else, making them rich. And if you want to continue doing that, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Most Americans are just thrilled to death and tickled pink to do just exactly that, living what they call the American dream. It's an illusion, but they believe in it and it makes them feel good. And most people prefer the illusion to reality. Now, I'm just the opposite. I prefer reality to illusion. And let me see if I can turn reality into the dreams that I really want. And that's where the Bible and God would like to see you go. And that's why there are statements in the Scripture, laws that are laid down, that say don't go surety for somebody. The whole concept of going surety, that is signing a note and guaranteeing somebody else's debt, is bad business. It's bad economic business. And yet, we do that, and we do it constantly. Every time you sign the back of a check, every time that you endorse a check, you're going surety for the maker of the check. There are some long-range economic consequences for doing that, even criminal sanctions for doing that. Most people don't get caught up in those sanctions directly, and so they feel like, well, I got away with it, or it's what everybody else is doing. And as long as everybody else is doing it, it's all right for me to do it. It's like credit cards. Everybody has a credit card. I think 80% of Americans have credit cards. I don't. What do I need credit cards for? I'm a lender, not a borrower. I've discovered that lending is much more profitable than borrowing. I used to be a borrower. And then one day I learned how to count. Once I learned how to count, I said, well, you know, this borrowing doesn't pay anything, but lending pays a lot. So I'm the guy that is supporting the lender. I'm the borrower. I'm supporting the lender. And that's why the Scripture also tells you not to practice usury. Usury, that's where you pay interest. Now, the statute is aimed against people that charge usury. It's against the law for this wicked, evil fellow to charge you interest. And that makes religious people feel real good. Well, you see, the law says you're not to charge me interest, and you're charging me interest, so therefore you're a bad, wicked, terrible, awful person, but I'm holy, righteous, just, and good. Yeah, but the guy that's lending you the money at interest isn't paying the economic penalty. You are. Every month when you pay your mortgage payment. I remember my granddad explained this to me. He bought a house one time. He's paying $50 a month payments. Bought a $5,000 house, paid 10% down. He's paying $50 a month payments on this little house in Willits, California. It was at 355 Lenore Avenue in Willits, California. Just this one little bedroom house, one small, tiny little bungalow house that just he and my grandmother lived in. You know, they were older people. And he worked down the street there at the Harold Castile Lumber Company. He's paying $50 a month. Can't you just picture this? And $46 a month went to interest and $4 a month went to principal. And this thing amortized out over 30 years. Now, there's a rule here. It's called the rule of 72. Let me show you how this rule works. Jot this down if you haven't got it. We'll show you how this works. If you take the interest rate and divide that into 72, let's just punch in 72 into the calculator, and let's divide that by 8. That means that in 9 years, the amount of money that you're paying is going to double. Now, remember last time we talked about a $40,000 house. You buy a $40,000 house, and over 30 years, you pay back $126,000. That's 40, 80, 120. That's, you're buying one house for you and two for the banker. That is an extremely profitable business for the banker, but not for you. Because what that means is you go out and borrow $40,000. And over the course of this loan, you're going to pay back $120,000 plus. That means that you're going to pay for this house that you're building, and you're going to buy and pay for two more houses for the banker. So you're going to, over 30 years, you're going to buy three houses. You're going to keep one and give two to the banker because he's going to loan you $40,000 to buy your house. How much does it cost to build a house? Well, I'm a general contractor, so it costs $20,000 to build a house. Now, let's divide that out. $126,000. Now, let's divide that by $20,000. That's 6.3. You see, boys and girls, if you were to handle your financials a little different than you're doing today, over the same 30-year period, you could have 6 houses instead of 1. 3 houses instead of 1. But what you're going to do is you're going to buy 3 houses or 6 houses, let somebody else have those, and you're going to keep 1. You know, even a wild drunken sailor ought to be able to figure out that that's not a good plan for me. It's a heck of a good plan for the banker, for the contractor. It's not a good plan for me. Now, our forefathers were homesteading land in Kansas, Nebraska, and Colorado, and Oregon. And they would go out on the plains and the prairies, and they would build themselves a sod house. Now, picture this. 1860, they leave St. Louis, and they get out there on the plains, and they stake out 160 acres, and they build a little sod house. And you've probably been into museums, and you've seen pictures of a man and his wife and a couple, 3 kids. And the picture is taken out in front of this little sod house. And they've got their prized possessions out there with them. Whenever they took these photographs, they would have the piano out here in the front yard. Or they would have the kitchen table or the dining room table. They'd have something. You know, the only piece of furniture that they had in this little sod house. And it's a little house. If you've ever seen one of these little soddies, they call them, it's just a one-room house. Everybody lives in this one room. And they got an outhouse out there somewhere. And they're out here on the prairies. Now, this is 1860. Then there's 70, 80, 90. By 1900, you take a look at these people 40 years later, a generation later. We call it 2 generations. Actually, the Bible calls 40 years a generation. A generation later, these people are building Victorian mansions in Omaha and Lincoln, Nebraska, that cover a whole block with wrought iron railings and balustrades and Victorian gingerbread, and they're paying $7,000 to build these houses, and they're paying cash from 1900 to 1920. How in the hell did that come about? How did these people, who in 1860, 70, and 80 are going out here claiming 160 acres, and then how are they making the money? What are they making the money on? Where do they get the $7,000 to build these mansions in Omaha? Well, they got it because they were practicing property and property rights instead of income and income tax. So what they were doing, they were going out here on the land, and they applied their labor to the land. And along with the God-supplied rain and sun, they put the seeds in the ground, the seeds grew, and they received a 47,200% return. I mentioned to you that farming is the most profitable endeavor God ever created or ever produced, ever thought up. It's better than banking. I mean, you can't beat banking where you come in here and I'm going to create $40,000 out of thin air and lend it to you at 10% interest. I mean, that's good. That's good. But there are some costs of goods sold there, and it's not as good as farming. Now, let me show you how good farming is. If you took one kernel of corn, just one kernel of corn, and you planted that one kernel in the ground, and it rained on that kernel, or you watered it, and that kernel grows into a corn stalk, and it grows to maturity, what's the return on it? Well, here's what the return is. It'll produce 2 ears. 2 ears of corn. The 2 ears of corn will have 16 rows each. And those 16 rows, I'll just figure it out here because there's 87,200. That's 872. So you take 872 and divide that by 16. And that's 54 kernels to the row. It's going to have 54 kernels to the row, 16 rows, and there's 2 of those cobs, or 2 of those ears, and that's 872 kernels of corn that you receive back in 120 days. It takes 120 days for this return. Now, that's only a third of a year. That's not a whole year. That's just a third of a year. So you get an 87,200% return in 120 days. Times three. That's the way those farmers were making those kinds of returns. That's why in one generation, they could start with nothing. And in one generation, they could go to Omaha and retire and take $7,000 and build a big mansion and pay cash for it. You people can't do that today. You can't do that because when you get out of college, and I've seen this many times, I'll relate one case. Guy got out of college, he was an MD, he was a DO, as a matter of fact, and he got a $100,000 line of credit the day he graduated from college. When he came out of medical school, the bank came to him and said, "We're going to give you a $100,000 line of credit." He took it, and he used it. And boy, did he live good. He established a practice, and he went into his medical profession, and he lived in a big house out in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and he invited me in and showed me his house and his wife and his kids and the whole nine yards. Within 10 years, he was divorced from the wife, making alimony and child support payments. He was bankrupt and broke and out of business. The young man was a very bright fellow. You know, you have to be a very bright fellow. You have to have a high IQ. An IQ measures the rapidity with which you're able to solve problems. People with IQs of 160 are people that can take a problem and solve it in seconds. You know, something that takes you and me, you know, an hour to figure out, these guys can figure that out in seconds. Guys like Donald Rumsfeld, George Bush, Colin Powell, these people are very bright, very intelligent people. And yet they're just dumb as a box of rocks. People that run Enron and Standard Oil and WorldCom and Global Crossing, these people are intelligent. They have high IQs. And they're just as ignorant as sin. And why is that? Well, because they're living in a delusional world. They've been raised. They have been born and bred and raised in a delusion. Psychopolitics. They actually believe the bullshit that they preach. They actually believe the same lies that they're feeding us. And they're out here practicing it on a great, grand scale. Social Security is being practiced nationwide and worldwide. Everybody in the world is involved in Social Security. Not the U.S. Social Security system, it's just that all the nations have adopted Social Security as the system. And this system of retirement that all of you old folks are relying upon, that you're gambling on, is an illusion, like Alice in Wonderland. Now, most of you can't grasp that. But then, I didn't come here to make you believe it. I'm not here beating my gums because I'm an evangelist and I'm just trying to get you to believe in Jesus and give your heart to the Lord today. I don't care whether you believe it or not. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm here to give you some information. If you want it, fine. If you don't want to, leave it lay. I don't care. Now, some of you people out there are smart enough to see that if the people that are running Enron run that thing into the ground with billions of dollars of losses, and you know, they had 36,000 employees that lost everything in the collapse of Enron. The 36,000 employees all believed in the same mirage, the same lies. They believed in the same delusion that the managers of the company believed in. Where did everybody get these delusions? Didn't they get them from public school? Didn't they get them from college? Didn't they get them from Economics 101 and good old Professor rip them up and snort them out was telling them when they were going to college about how you leverage and pyramid and how you borrow and pay back and service debt and do all these things? Sure they did, just like I did. Now, there's one thing that I remembered when I was a kid growing up. You know, I'm 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. Now, when I was a kid growing up, the Depression, you know, I was born at the end of the Depression. And the old-timers could remember that Depression, and they said to me, never borrow money, never pay interest, and never put your money in the bank. I was told it. I was raised on that. I didn't follow that advice, of course. I went out and borrowed money. I paid interest. I borrowed money and built houses, and yeah, I went broke and went upside down, just like everybody that does that does. But I had been warned. See, I'd been told. You people listening to me today probably have never heard this before. Never borrow money, never pay interest, and never put your money in a bank. You've never heard that before. When I got to high school, I had an ag teacher, and the ag teacher, when I told him that, he laughed. He snorted, and he had a college degree. And he was preaching college, and he was saying, what you people need to do is go to college and learn something, get smart, and grow up. Yeah, that's the old days. We have federal deposit insurance today. You know, we have a vibrant economy. We got all these neat things going for us. Oh, yeah, just like the Roman Empire had all these neat things going for them. We got the biggest army in the world. You know, America's got the biggest army in the world. Well, we got the most technologically advanced army. We might not have the most soldiers in the army, but there isn't anybody in the world that can dink around with us. We'll destroy them in just days. Everybody knows that. But it's really a big paper tiger. You know, you're over in Iraq now and you're out of troops, and the great American empire is just about to disintegrate and collapse. Yeah, that's where reality's at. The illusion that we're all living under is that America has this great nuclear umbrella, this great military machine, and by golly, we can just whip anybody in the world. In fact, we can whip everybody in the world and do it all at the same time with one hand tied behind our back. Now, that's an illusion, boys and girls. That's going to come back and bite you in the butt. Now, in the scripture, there are a number of laws that are written. Let me just demonstrate to you a couple of three of these laws in our few minutes that we have left. You go out and you borrow money. Let's take a credit card with $10,000 on it. And you receive this $10,000 credit card in the mail. God, that's just wonderful. And you're just ecstatic that somebody trusts you with $10,000. The credit card company, this is Visa or MasterCard, they're not giving you $10,000 of their money. They're creating $10,000 worth of credit right out of thin air. They have a license to do that granted by Congress. They're not giving you a quarter, not a dime, nothing, zero, zilch. But they're going to lend that to you, and you're going to go out and spend it. And you're going to spend this credit out in the marketplace. And, of course, the stores that you buy these big screen TVs and gasoline and all these things from, they're going to get paid in credit from the credit card company, and then they're going to go out and spend it and spend it and spend it. And then as this money circulates through the economy, it drives prices up. Today, your big screen TV costs you $2,000, and next year it'll be $2,100 and $2,200 and $2,300 and so on. Gasoline, when I was a kid, was, I saw it one time, as low as 25 cents a gallon, where we lived, 25 cents a gallon. Today, it's about $2 a gallon. Now, actually, the price of gasoline in the United States is way cheaper than it ought to be. Gasoline should be around, $3-$4 a gallon, and it's only $2. So it's really a great bargain. I can remember as a kid, telephone time was $3.75 for 3 minutes to call my Uncle Carol in Orlando, Florida, and it took 20 minutes to complete the call. And it was staticky. Today it cost me a nickel a minute. That's a real value. That's a real bargain. In spite of inflation, the price has gone down with technology. But the price of automobiles that used to be $1,500 when I was a kid today are $15,000 to $30,000. Everything else has gone up in price, including food, clothing, and shelter, and everything that you need to buy. And you've got less to buy it with. So when you get this $10,000 credit card, you say to yourself, wow, boy, I'm in the top 400 now. Now take that $10,000, and let's take our 72. Remember, take 72, divide that by 27, would you? 27, because that's the interest rate, remember? And that's 2.66. Now, here's what that means. Go max out your credit card. Pay 27% interest on that loan, and every 2 2/3 years, that's 2 years and 8 months, you're paying $10,000. Every 2 years and 8 months, you're paying $10,000. I mean, these guys created this $10,000 out of nowhere, loaned it to you, you went out and spent it, and you're paying 27% interest. Let's be more pragmatic. You know, the Discover card only charges you 15% interest. So let's take the 72 and divide that by 15. And that's every 4.8 years. So every 5 years, their loan matures and doubles. Take $10,000 and pay 15% interest on that, and every 5 years, you're paying $10,000. 10 years, another $10,000. 15 years, another $10,000. 20, 25. Now, what's happening here is the reason that your standard of living is getting lower and lower, you got two things working against you. Inflation, number one, and interest, number two. And those are the two penalties, two primary penalties that you're paying for the violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And the usury statutes and the surety statutes that you find in the scripture. Proverbs talks about surety. Just look them up. I don't have them right in front of me, but just look up usury, U-S-U-R-Y, usury, in Strong's Concordance, and you'll see it's mentioned 23 times in the Bible. Those 23 times tell you don't do that. Now, I don't know what more God could do for you. I mean, he created you, he created the world, and put all these neat things in here, and he gave you a book, a guidebook, kind of like an owner's manual with your new Ford car. They give you an owner's manual, and they'll tell you put unleaded gas in this hole, and put ATF fluid in this hole, and put 30 weight motor oil in this hole over here. Now, if you get the holes mixed up, and you're putting gasoline in the crankcase, and 90 weight gear oil into the transmission, your car probably isn't going to run near as well as it could have. And this same creator, you know, devised this universe, devised this system, devised this physical, real world around us, and there are certain laws that make this thing work. And if you get out here and you start paying interest on a loan, there's just natural numbers. You know, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 2 and 2 is 4, 4 and 4 is 8, 2 times 10 is 20. I don't make it that way, and neither did you. It's just, that's the way it is. That's reality. That's where reality really is. Now, the illusion that we've all been taught and trained with is that it doesn't make any difference as long as we've got enough money to service the debt, as long as we can make the payments. But you see, as this interest compounds from 10 to 20, and 20 to 40, and 40 to 80, and 80 to 160, it gets to a point where you can no longer service the debt. And that's what happened to Enron. That's what happens to everybody that participates in debt and usury. It grows geometrically, and geometric progression is a killer. It'll wipe you out. So you're going to get wiped out. We just don't know when. But if you learn how to count, you'll be able to predict about when the ultimate is going to occur to you, when you can no longer make your payments. Hey, I'm out of time. We'll be back here, and we'll talk more about this when we come back next time here on the Law Hour. Remember, the Law Hour is brought to you by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events. We do that 7 days a week. And remember, the Law Hour offers a free 4-hour introductory CD set for your copy. Just call the law school. The number here is area code 417-273-4967. If you'd like more information on the Law Hour and the law school, just go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Well, we're just about out of time. That's the signal that says my time is up. I'll have to leave it right there, and I'll see you back here tomorrow, God willing. Same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.